Okay, welcome back. Hour number two. Glad you're on board tonight. I wish we had 2 hours to do this next hour because we have that much information. But let me just preface this entree by saying Wednesday we will spend much more time on monkeypox than we will tonight. We'll know more by then as well. There's a lot of confusion out there, and we're going to get to that in just a moment. Erica is here as always, and we're going to bring you a look at something else tonight, which I think a lot of you may be a little challenged to follow, but we're going to make it as simple as we can. This is going to answer a lot of questions. It'll probably create a lot more, but it has to do with amyloidosis. You've heard Erica mention amyloid plaques many times in relation to Alzheimer's and so forth. We're going to get into this pretty deep because this is a very, very big subject. It's huge. So stand by for that. Erica, welcome back. Oh, okay. All right. Okay. We're working on getting her connected. I hope they haven't blocked her. That would be, frankly, not... Oh, you're just reconnecting. All right, okay. I got it, okay. All right, now, monkeypox. Let me just start out with this. There's an article, I've got it up in headlines, should be up momentarily. Monkeypox, Truth versus Fear Porn, written by a Rhoda Wilson. But it's actually just a preface to a major article written by our savior, Dr. Robert Malone, who is now telling us at great length on how we should and should not react to the monkeypox issue. We call it an issue. We'll have much more on this on Wednesday. And he starts out by saying, the monkeypox virus, which originates in various regions in Africa, is related to smallpox, otherwise known as variola, which are both members of the genus blah, blah, blah. However, it is important to understand that variola, major or minor, is the species of virus which is responsible for the worst human disease caused by orthopox viruses. And I'm going to jump to the end of this in just a moment. Are you there, kid?
I'm here, Jeff. Good evening.
All right, you sound a little bit... Let me say... Okay, all right. You sound all right. Maybe you can push the high end up on the mixer, Todd. Get it a little sharper. Thank you. Okay, I was just mentioning the Dr. Robert Malone article, which is very lengthy, and we're going to do this in rather short order tonight and come back on Wednesday and do it at much greater length and depth. You saw the Malone article? I guess I sent it to you. Did you get a chance to look through it at all?
Yeah, I did skim it.
Okay. Skimming means she didn't have enough time to read it. That's my line. I never have enough time. So I do a lot of skimming. So at the beginning, he does his scientific layout, and then he runs through the whole thing. And just to get to the punchline, at the end, he says, in my opinion, based on currently available information, which is interesting because if anybody on the planet understands pox viruses, it'd be Robert Malone. This guy knows everything. Believe it. He is in on the inner circle. He's got deep state connections that won't quit. He knows what's going on. But he writes, in my opinion, based on currently available information, monkeypox is a virus and disease which is endemic in Africa. Emerges sporadically after transmission into humans from animal hosts and is typically spread by close human contact. It is readily controlled by classical public health measures. Is it really? It does not have a high mortality rate. More on that in a minute. Unless there has been some specific genetic alteration. Oh, that could never happen. Either through evolution or intentional genetic manipulation, it is not a significant biothreat and has never been considered a high-threat pathogen in the past. So, says Bobby, stop the fear-mongering, misinformation, and disinformation. In other words, take a walk. Nothing to see here, friends. Keep moving right along. Well, all right, one more thing, and then I'll get Erica in on this. Monkeypox is home in East Africa for one strain, which has a 10% mortality rate. That's high. Now, in West Africa is the other readily known strain, which has a 1% mortality rate. One out of 100 die. All right. Now, from there, we go into a situation, a mode, which I used to call the sky's the limit. We don't know what was going on in those BSL-3 and 4 biolabs in Ukraine, financed by the U.S. and Biden's and others, and maybe Biden's handler. We don't know. But it was dirty, and it was down, and it was ugly, and anything could have gone on there. We don't have to go to Ukraine, though, to do this kind of work. It can be done right here at American universities with grants. They'll compartmentalize it any way they want. So, all right, we have two strains that we know about and possibly a third. I did read a story claiming there was a third strain, and the suggestion was it had been given the gain-of-function overhaul. So it's a third strain. That's what I read. Is it true? I can't vouch for that. I can't vet the story. I can just tell you what I read. All right, your turn.
Yeah, it's hard to know how seriously to take this right now. I think most people are tired of it, unwilling to believe it, and then others are just laughing at it. And it may be nothing more than these immune-compromised people who have taken the shot succumbing to a virus that would normally be fairly benign. There's another
depending
virus
on which strain you
thing.
Got.
Yeah.
If you got the bad strain in East Africa, it's 10%. Anyway, that's what the books say. Go ahead.
No, we have to bear in mind that all along since the rollout of the vaccines, they have been seeing frequent incidences of another pox virus called molossum, also known as water warts.
Okay, you broke up a little bit there. I want to get that clear. Molluscum. Molluscum. M-O-L-O-S-C-U-M. All right, molluscum. Okay, go ahead.
Commonly known as water warts, and they appear as pustules on the body, much like any of the pox viruses. I mean, the pox is a, you know, these pimply-like things that appear on
chicken
the skin.
Chicken pox. Think about that.
Well, yeah. Yeah, chicken pox, but be careful because that's a herpes virus. We're talking here about pox
viruses. I'm talking about the appearance of the little bubbles. Yeah, that's all.
Right, yeah. Right. So is it possible that some of these so-called monkeypox cases are actually this molluscum variant of the pox virus? Maybe. The difference would be that, I mean, the monkeypox is accompanied by fever and swollen lymph nodes, whereas the molluscum or water warts are typically just, you know, ugly-looking, pimply things on the skin. But it is becoming more and more prevalent in the people who have received the vax because of this immune suppression that's happening. And then my understanding is the initial reports of this pox virus, monkeypox virus, was occurring in homosexual males in the UK, and I guess on further inquiry, these males had attended some sort of a festival in the Canary Islands.
An innocent little party.
and when they all went home, they brought this virus with them. It's hard to know what the truth is at this point. I'm also hearing reports that the virus is a part of the spike protein in the vaccine. That seems like a stretch to me.
Let me ask a question.
I have to do some investigation on that.
That's why we wanted a couple more days to see where this is shaking out. What Erica just said is fascinating, and if it's true, it opens another door to intrigue, conspiracy, and backdoor synthetic deadly science. It appears, according to at least one source, that the monkeypox, or a portion of the virus, was found to be embedded in and part of the spike protein in the vax. How did it get there? And the other side of that coin is interesting because Erica tells them the monkeypox won't fit in its entirety into that spike protein. At least that's the way it looks now.
No, no. The monkeypox virus in its entirety is, I think, 180,000 base pairs, while the spike protein is about 3,800. So that part of it doesn't make sense to me. So perhaps I'm misunderstanding what's being proposed here. I think what might have happened is they could have isolated the virulence factors from the monkey virus and inserted them into either the entire coronavirus or the portion of the spike protein. I'm going to have to look closer at that, what they're actually talking about.
Would the virulence factor alone be able to create the overall structure of the monkeypox in a person?
No. So that part doesn't make sense to me, so I don't know what exactly is being proposed with that concept. But they do know, I mean, we've studied viruses, families of viruses, to the point where they can identify and isolate the factors about a virus that cause the disease, that cause it to be pathogenic. And in the case of this monkeypox virus, or maybe all pox viruses, they produce proteins that disable portions of the immune system. That's how a lot of viruses exert their ill effects. They disable portions of the immune system. So the body is incapable of getting rid of them, defeating them. And they know which ones those are in these smallpox viruses, and could they take that sequence and put it into a coronavirus? Yeah, why not? So maybe perhaps that's
good.
What's... Okay.
No, you finish. Go ahead.
No, that's it. I that's all I can think of. I mean, there's no possible way you could fit the entire pox virus, monkeypox virus, into either the spike protein or even the coronavirus. It's too big.
Right. All right. Well, that raises the possibility of synthetic, a new strain. They take the housing, the structure of it, the basic building blocks, they put the virulence factor in there, and they embed that. It's kind of like monkeypox light. They embed that somehow in the spike protein. Believe it, friends, we haven't found out by any stretch of the imagination yet all the things that are built into this spike protein. This is really bad. Dr. Chetty was more than correct. The most deadly, toxic poison ever created by man. And that's the truth. All right, what I'd like to do here is we're going to bring this monkeypox thing to a close. We're going to have a lot more Wednesday for you. Erica's spending hours and hours watching this. I'm going to read the headlines on monkeypox, just to give you an idea of what you can go explore. Monkeypox weaponized in deep state labs. That's one article. The Malone article, The Truth versus More Fear Porn. Monkeypox spreads like wildfire all across the planet. See how they're writing this? There might be 150 cases. As WHO warns, there will be more cases. You see the fear porn. Gain of function on pox viruses confirmed. Now, that's an interesting little video. That's on Rumble. The monkeypox tabletop exercise, what did they know? And that was 2019, was it?
No, it was just last year, last March.
2021, okay. Monkeypox and the curious death of Dr. Buller, B-U-L-L-E-R. That's worth a look. Here we go again. Bill Gates, bioterrorist, trends big as netizens blame billionaire from monkeypox. UN AIDS body says media monkeypox reports are homophobic and racist. Monkeypox outbreak primarily spreading via sexual contact, say WHO officials. Scotland, Denmark confirmed first cases of monkeypox. Russia has herd immunity against monkeypox thanks to mass vaccination against smallpox in the past. So just a little thumbnail sketch of what's out there. So don't jump to any conclusions. We'll be back Wednesday with a lot more and help refine this and bring it into better focus. Anything you want to add? Go right ahead.
Well, I would just draw attention to that schedule that appeared in the tabletop exercise where they, according to what that scenario was, they announced the outbreak of these monkeypox cases in May 15 of 2022, and then it went away. It disappeared from the news and only to reappear in January of 2023 on the level of a pandemic.
Okay, now that's on the tabletop exercise. She's got her years right. She's just quoting from the exercise. Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know how much stock we can put into that, but so far they've met the first timeline, the first milestone on their timeline.
Yeah.
So I think it's something to just, you know, keep in the back of your mind. Don't panic, but know that it's talked about, proposed. And pox viruses can be deadly, particularly if you don't have an immune system, or they've been weaponized to contain these virulence factors that make them deadly.
And we should just insert there that it is our current opinion that the spike protein is going to lead to the virtual devastation of the immune system in everyone who has gotten a real bioweapon injection. We think that's coming. Okay. Now, we've got if you look in guests, you can see a couple things that we'd like you to look at. One is a video. I'm going to play it. It's only 2 minutes long. But before I do that, I think I want to just, if I can, lay a couple things out. I want to make this really user-friendly for you. I want you to understand this. We've all heard incessantly about clots and clotting, clot shots, right? And we all think of blood clots. Well, apparently, a lot of the blood clots that are killing people, maybe most all of them, are not blood clots. They're clots, but they're made of something else. This is all about amyloidosis, amyloid plaques. And I extended that to amyloid clots. Here's Wikipedia, just as a little entree. Amyloidosis is a group of diseases in which abnormal proteins known as amyloid fibrils, think of little teeny tiny threads, little teeny tiny fibrils, build up in the tissue. There are several nonspecific and vague signs and symptoms associated with amyloidosis. In other words, you can have it and you barely notice it in the beginning. You wouldn't notice it at all in the beginning. These include fatigue, peripheral edema, weight loss, shortness of breath. Now, these are more substantial. These are down the road a little bit when these fibrils have had a chance to build up in these plaques. And the video will show you, we're going to look at it, what these plaques look like. I'll read this again. These include fatigue, peripheral edema, weight loss, shortness of breath, palpitations, and feeling faint while standing. In AL amyloidosis, specific indicators can include enlargement of the tongue and periorbital purpura. Purpura? Anyway.
Periorbital, having to do with the eye.
Oh, they didn't put a hyphen in there. Tricked me. In wild type ATTR amyloidosis, non-cardiac symptoms include bilateral carpal tunnel syndrome, that's in your wrist, lumbar spinal stenosis. Stenosis is a shrinking of the canal down your spine in which your spinal cord resides. Stenosis, it's a tightening up, not pleasant. Bicep tendon rupture, small fiber neuropathy, and autonomic dysfunction. Amyloidosis. All right. Tell us what you have to say about it. Then we're going to play this video.
Well, we've mentioned this several times now, the formation of these plaques, fibrils that result from protein misfolding and on exposure to the spike protein. The spike protein, when it comes into contact with your native proteins, can cause them to misfold. And when that happens, it begins a domino-like reaction where it will cause the protein next to it also to misfold. And they kind of collapse like a folding chair.
Cascade.
So the your proteins are supposed to be in a very defined three-dimensional shape in order for them to function properly. And when they don't fold properly, they collapse into what they call beta sheets, like a folding chair, and aggregate and don't function properly and cause problems in whatever organ or tissue that's occurring in. So now we have a study that just came out of Sweden, published this week, confirming the potential for the spike protein to cause this to happen throughout the body. So there are 7 sites on the spike protein that, when they come into contact with your native proteins, can cause them to misfold and become aggregates and end up in organs and tissues, and pretty much over time cause the major dysfunction of those organs. And it's most notable in the heart, the liver, the kidney, but it can also happen in the brain and the joints,
the lungs,
and the intestinal tract. So it's basically a process of, it's almost like a form of scar tissue, a fibrosis.
Okay, we're going to look at the video. Please, all of you, load the video up. It's right there under Jeff and Erica. You'll see it. Amyloid fibrils, over 30 types exist. And you just heard Erica say one of the most revelatory things that you could ever hear about the spike protein. There are 7 locations on that protein. They're all different, and each one of them can cause any of your indigenous, your inherent, your native proteins to misfold. But the spike protein has to be cracked open to do that. That's called cleaved. Okay? In other words, the spike protein is, let's see, it's a nice round spherical looking thing just for fun. And then all of a sudden it cracks open. Well, when it opens up, all 7 of those contact points, which can cause your own body's proteins to misfold, become available to do exactly that. You follow? So that spike protein cleaves, it cracks open, and those 7 locations are available to turn your proteins into trash. All right? Ruin them. And ultimately kill you. Whoever built this spike protein, this is a masterpiece of satanic evil and death. It's no joke.
Yep.
This is nothing lightweight. This is extinction level event potential. We've talked about epitopes. I hope you remember those as well. And the amyloid fibrils, think of little threads, and you'll get the idea. Do you all remember the video that we showed not long ago? I think the guy's, what was his name? Hirschfield or something? The autopsy guy?
Yeah, the embalmer.
Embalmer. Yeah, and mm-hmm. he was shown pulling these 3-foot-long clots out of veins and arteries in the legs of the deceased. Now, if for those of you who saw that, and that was probably most of you, you may well remember that these clots looked more like they were rubber than a soft blue blood clot would look like. These were made of something entirely different. These are not blood clots. They're amyloid clots. You got to remember this. This is really big. This is huge. Those clots are not blood clots. They're amyloid clots caused by misfolded proteins, and they turn into little strands as they gather together called fibrils, little threads. And these threads will bind together, and pretty soon there'll be enough threads. And what do you have when you weave a bunch of threads together? You have a rope. You have a big, thick clot, an amyloid clot made of all these little tiny fibrils that are made of little tiny misfolded proteins. Your own body's misfolded proteins caused by the spike. The spike protein misfolds your proteins. They make fibrils. The fibrils, little threads, make bigger threads. They weave together, and then you've got a huge clot. And then the blood can't pass. These are not clots that can be treated traditionally with heparin. They were saying, remember, we've heard stories? Heparin doesn't work anymore like it used to. Well, guess what? These aren't clots like blood clots. Go ahead.
Well, and the heparin is dysfunctional too. It's been damaged, so it doesn't have its biological activity to do what it's supposed to do, which is to break up a clot or prevent it from forming.
These are amyloid clots, amyloid plaque clots. Plaques being the same thing. They're also made of little fibrils that get together and they turn into a deposit. And there's nothing you can do about it. There's no treatment at present for any of these amyloid plaque formations or amyloid clots. This is a huge development and explanation in terms of how the spike works. It turns your body's proteins into your own death. And when you saw that guy pull that Hirschman, that embalmer, pull that clot, it had to be 3 feet long. What color was it? Was it blue? Blood? Blue? Blackish blue? No. It was a grayish yellow. And it looked like rubber, like a rubber band. And in point of fact, you are being, go ahead, this is your word.
Rubberized. So these proteins deposits can happen, not just in the blood, but that's the most obvious one that people are able to look at right now to see evidence of this, but it's also happening heart, liver, kidneys, the brain, if the spike gets into the brain, the gastrointestinal tract. I mean, there's a lot of people having gastrointestinal issues either after the infection or the injection that might be evidence of amyloidosis happening in the intestinal tract. It can happen in the joints. So there's any number of organs that can be affected in this way. So this is a really evil, evil.
It's satanic. It's demonic. I have one more thing to add. I'm going to look at this video. We want to look at it with all of you out there. So don't roll it yet. It's right under our names. You'll see it. Amyloid fibrils, over 30 types exist. So get that video queued up. We can watch it together. It's only 2 minutes long. You will understand a lot after you see this video. The other issue is that the spike protein, as you know, causes 24/7, 365 microclotting in your capillaries, where the cells of the blood have to line up one at a time to pass through the capillary. You will get amyloid plaque buildup in the capillaries. That's what microclotting is. It's not blood clotting. We've been actually led astray from the beginning by hearing this, it's blood clots. But no, not necessarily. Yes, blood can clot behind these things, but we think that for the most part, they're composed of your own body's proteins that have been forcibly misfolded by the spike protein, which has been cleaved or broken open, exposing the 7 interaction points between that protein, the spike protein, and your indigenous native body proteins, which causes them to misfold and become, in time, little long threads, we'll call it, little threads, fibrils. Okay? All right, yep. I hope you got that. Now, let's look at this video. It's a wonderful video, and we've been sitting on this for a long time, and I wish I had $10 for every time Erica has made the point, amyloid plaques. We'd be rich.
Yeah, this has been a feature of the virus, as we learn more and more about it, why it's so insidious. But also, interestingly, this amyloidosis was also mentioned as a adverse event related to the Pfizer vaccine, this recent data dump that the Pfizer was forced to deliver, indicated that amyloidosis is a possible consequence of the vaccine. No surprise, because, no. I mean, when you understand that these vaccines are forcing the body to produce a foreign protein and overproduce it as well. And that's where you, that's where you start to run into a problem. When you cannot regulate your body's own protein production, you can run into these types of disorders.
Meaning the spike protein.
You're just flooding your body with abnormal amounts of protein, and then they begin to misfold, and they don't function properly, and they build up, and the body really, at a certain point, has no way of getting rid of them. If they're at a low level, you can deal with them, but this is an assault that's completely unnatural, and it's not a surprise that this is a feature of these injections
and just
from the spike protein.
Exactly. Paul Craig Roberts wrote a piece today. Pfizer tells federal judge that Pfizer owns the federal government and is thereby immune to normal contract law. Paul Craig Roberts. Okay, you get the idea. All right, let's roll this video. I've got it at 001, but whatever. Just ready, everybody? Okay. 3, 2, 1, roll it. And some of you are going to have a commercial, I'm afraid, but
name for a group of rare diseases in which abnormal proteins misfold, leading them to aggregate and deposit in tissues and organs where they cause damage. Proteins are molecules that are essential for the structure and functioning of all living organisms. Our body produces many thousands of different proteins. Each has a specific role and is made according to the genetic instructions carried within our DNA. Once made, the protein folds into a particular shape, allowing it to work properly and interact with other molecules.
And the video is showing this perfectly. It's showing a protein going into its proper shape. So when you watch this video, this is really beautifully done.
Sometimes proteins misfold and don't function properly, but normally our body is very good at getting rid of them before they cause any problems. Problems can occur if, for example, the removal mechanism isn't working properly, or if more misfolded proteins are made than our body can handle. Amyloidosis occurs when misfolded proteins aren't removed in the normal way. Instead, they accumulate and stick together to form long, rigid fibrils that deposit in various tissues and organs. These deposits are called amyloid, and over time, start to cause damage. More than 30 different proteins are known to misfold and form amyloid, meaning that over 30 different types of amyloidosis exist. Some proteins misfold because of a faulty gene we inherit from one of our parents, whereas others misfold because of factors we acquire during the course of our lives, or as a result of aging. Regardless of the type, once formed, amyloid is insoluble and difficult to break down, As it builds up, it stops the affected organs from working properly. Symptoms vary depending on which organs are involved. The most common include the heart, kidneys, liver, spleen, nervous system, and digestive system. But this varies according to the type of amyloidosis and also differs between patients who have the same type. There is currently no cure for amyloidosis, but treatment options are available for the most common types, and novel treatments are being investigated, including ways to stop misfolded proteins being made and ways to stabilize proteins to prevent them from misfolding. The aim is to stop disease progression, restore organ function, and improve quality of life for patients.
Okay, I want all of you to keep that video, if you can, just tag it somehow, and go back and look at it occasionally. This is just another factor in the trail of absolute anti-life behavior of the spike protein. It does this. It creates amyloidosis, amyloid plaques in your heart. It can be in your nervous system. The spike protein seems to have a special liking for nerves, so you get neuropathic problems. This may be the reason people are going blind after a year or two of getting a shot, a year and a half, I should be more specific.
Yeah.
You think about it, you get the spike into a nerve, a major nerve. Think of a computer. This is a control mechanism in your body's computer, and it fills it with amyloid plaques, fibrils, however you wish to pronounce it. He was English. So think about this very carefully and understand that spike proteins are the issue, and we haven't even gotten maybe halfway to the bottom of this ugly barrel of death. They don't stop. They create micro clots, but they're not blood clots. They're amyloid clots around the clock. Now, if you got an amyloid clot that shuts down a capillary, the blood behind it will stack up, and that'll turn into a clot potentially too. You see how evil this is? How well planned it was?
And remember that spike protein can be aerosolized and uptaken by other people, animals.
That's why we urge you to please, when you go out, get an N95 mask, wear a mask. I've got, frankly, 3M makes them. They're about $25. It's a half face mask. It's bridge of your nose on down. And it's got a filter on each side. I'm not wearing it yet to the store, but I've got it. I'm glad I have it. If I ever had to be in a very closed compartment with people, I sure as hell would wear it. And don't forget about the banners on the homepage showing the personal unit and then the mobile unit. It's a little bit bigger. It's about like a cell phone that you can wear around your neck and clean the pathogens out of the air immediately around your body. That's the theory. So I'm going to get a mobile unit.
Yeah, I can vouch for it.
And go ahead.
Yeah, I can vouch for the. I have both, and I can vouch for the mobile unit. I can definitely tell a difference with. In terms of just like it cleans the air. I mean, it's noticeable. The other one works, but
the other one works on
the
basis of ions. The mobile unit uses ions and has a very high-tech, NASA-approved honeycomb filter system that it runs the air through as well. So there are two issues at work with a mobile unit and one with the personal unit. I wear the personal unit. I'm going to get a mobile unit, though. The only difference is you have to wear a little battery with it and you put it on a fanny pack or whatever to charge the mobile unit and get it to run.
But it's not that big. It would be somewhat clunkier than wearing the other one. But it depends on your situation. If you're going to be stuck in an airplane for 5, 6, 7 hours or something, I would definitely go for that mobile unit and bring the power supply in a fanny pack.
I would say you'd be relatively, we're not making any guarantees here, but I would be frankly confident with one of those in my lap, cleaning the air with ions and with that honeycomb NASA-approved endorsed filter. That's the best we can do now. So it's just something to think about, okay? And I don't get any money on any of these endorsements that I make. I'm trying to bring information your way. So all the supplements, you know, some are, they're different. We've got a new sponsor. I mentioned that earlier. But I'm not an owner of the companies. The new sponsor is, you'll hear more about it. You can see the banner up there. It's Colloidal Silver, which is a lot of fans in this country for colloidal silver. And this gentleman has figured out a way to make it one atom of colloidal silver, the smallest yet. So you study up, do your research. But we have wonderful products, the best of the best, we think, that we can offer you to try to protect yourself. But above all, when you're out and about, please understand that things aren't normal. Even if people are no longer wearing masks, it may look normal sometimes. It's not normal. It never will be normal again.
No, we're in the age of green goo, biowarfare.
You want to define that just for fun? Green goo again?
Well, okay,
again?
So green goo, this was coined by Nick Szabo of Bitcoin fame back in 1993 when he was a student at MIT. And he described a scenario where we were coming into the age of nanotechnology, and at the time there was much talk about gray goo, which was just little nano robots of sorts, and then that kind of morphed into green goo because we figured out how to manipulate life or DNA, RNA, to be able to construct viruses, self-replicating genetic material. And it would just be a matter of time before this technology was weaponized. And he predicted that in the not-too-distant future, I believe we're on the cusp of that right now, where they would create these pathogens in labs and then release them on the public as they saw fit, to achieve a depopulation agenda, keep the population under control. But he also advised various ways of protecting oneself against those scenarios. And it involved, you know, being on the lookout, being vigilant for what he termed green goo, which is another word for synthetic biology. It's artificial. It doesn't evolve naturally. It was created in a lab, much like this SARS virus. And acknowledging or being vigilant about identifying the green goo and figuring out how it was transmitted and avoiding the vectors that are known to transmit it.
Very good. He was a visionary of sorts. All right, let's go back.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say.
No, I was just
going to
say he was a member of what was known as the Extropians at the time, who were the forerunners of the transhumanists, the present-day transhumanists.
Very good. All right, amyloid plaques, again, are composed of misfolded proteins, most of which are caused by the spike protein, which has 7 sites on it. Once it has opened up, so to speak, and exposed those 7 sites, they look for your body's native proteins to misfold them, and they begin to stick together, and they form little teeny tiny threads, okay? And then those threads get bigger, and more threads agglutinate and aggregate, and pretty soon you've got a pretty good-sized thread. And if that's in a blood vessel, an artery, or in your heart, or in your kidneys. You got a big problem, and there's no way to treat it. They call these amyloid plaques. They look like threads initially, but they grow into a plaque. And in the human brain, these amyloid plaques form in between the neurons in your brain and whatever other items are up there working. Go ahead, Erica, explain that a little bit more. You know more about that.
Well, yeah, so they build up these protein deposits that become thread-like, can build up in whatever organs are being affected, with whatever specific protein is misfolding, and then they cause dysfunction of that organ. Now, this whole process can take years,
but at some point you begin to experience. This could be fast,
well,
too, couldn't it? Isn't that possible?
It wouldn't be overnight. It takes some time, not overnight. To accumulate
months.
Enough of that.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're seeing with this new form of CJD. I mean, Luc Montagnier called it a new form of CJD in this recent study they did in France.
Well, that was overnight.
I mean, I suspect in these cases that there was already a disease in progress and the spike protein somehow accelerated that process. I don't know. I mean, there's still a lot of question marks with this. Certainly in the blood, the clotting is instantaneous. As soon as the spike protein hits the blood, instant clot. And we've seen that with the pictures that were sent in from your listener in Germany.
Right away.
The blood starts to become stringy and thick.
And when they try and take blood from people, Nurse Anne has explained, when they try to do a blood draw, they can't get the blood to come out. Too many little tiny fibers and strings. No, it doesn't work.
Yep.
These are clots, but they're not blood clots. They're amyloid clots. You're seeing clots made of what look like a kind of a gray-yellow substance. You've seen the pictures. You've seen the videos. These are not normal blood clots. So they're like rubber.
Rich.
And that's why, exactly, protein rich. That's why Erica calls them rubberizing clots. You're turning into rubber. Because it's not rubber, but it looks like it, and it stretches like it. These are not normal blood clots that can be dissolved.
They're very, very cool.
This is really an horrific new dynamic to this that I must give always Erica credit. She was the one who was mentioning amyloid plaques a year ago, mentioning it in terms of Alzheimer's or ALS that get into the brain and cause trouble. But now we realize that they're everywhere. They can be in anywhere the spike protein is. How many spike proteins do we figure are manufactured after a dose of Moderna or Pfizer? What do we figure? Trillions.
I think it was... trillions anyway, yes.
Trillions of spike proteins.
Yes, there's 13.1 billion mRNAs in the Pfizer from which can be generated at least 100 spike proteins.
So and we don't know that it doesn't go on forever. We don't know it stops at 100. We don't know.
Well, the mRNA is still there, so it could be still producing the protein.
So here's the point. Go ahead.
This amyloidosis, this abnormal protein deposit going on throughout the body, I have a feeling that this is vastly underdiagnosed right now with a lot of these people that are not feeling well after the vax, and they're going to their doctors and trying to figure out why. I don't know that they're actually looking for this condition, the amyloidosis. They're looking for more obvious disorders.
Traditional clotting, for sure? Traditional?
I think it would be difficult to diagnose unless you were looking for it.
I agree.
And ultimately, it may involve having to have a biopsy of the organ that's affected, which is no small thing.
Keep in mind, this is the spike protein at work doing what it does. It has 7 sites built into it that when they encounter one of your own body's native proteins, no matter what protein it is, can apparently cause all of them, or at least 30 of them, to misfold and to begin to build these little fibers. And those fibers stick together and they get bigger and they get bigger. And then they get to be 3 feet long, like you saw the mortician in the video pulling it out of somebody's leg vein, like rubber. Gray, yellowy rubber. Not a blood clot. And nothing can be done about it. Briefly, how does the spike protein inhibit heparin again for people?
Well, it binds to it, and just by binding to it, it's going to negate its biological activity.
Yeah. So we had Nurse Ann tell us that heparin just isn't working as good as it used to, and they don't know why.
Yeah.
Well, the reason is it's been disabled, but it's not the kind of thing that'll have any effect, apparently, on these amyloid plaque clots that can be 2-3 feet long. And God knows what they must look like in a micro sense. Think about it. Microclotting at a capillary level? These are not normal blood clots. And as soon as they shut a capillary down, what happens? The blood behind it starts to back up, and you'll have a double clot, so to speak. You'll have one of blood, and you'll have one of amyloid materials, proteins.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
Not good.
Anything? No. This is. We'll post the program as usual on the homepage. Please keep this video and refer to it. And understand that the spike protein is the deadliest, most evil thing that allegedly mankind, has ever created. And we don't know the whole of it yet. We're learning. Thank you.
This is plenty. If this was all there was, this would be plenty. But it's this and that much more.
It's just mind-boggling. Great job. Thank you.
Yeah.
And talk soon. We'll keep at it. Wednesday we'll be back. We're looking at this monkeypox thing for you real carefully. But tonight was really a big deal to understand amyloidosis. And it's not hard. Just keep looking at that video and listen to the program again. Okay, thank you. Great job.
Okay, Jeff. My pleasure. Good night, everyone.
And we will be right back with more. Hang on.